All right, hit record when you when you're ready to hit record. You've hit record. Okay, CCNA 1, module 9, part 2. Last week we talked about subnetting, and we started to talk about subnetting and IP addresses and stuff. Now, before I go on, does anybody remember any questions they may have had from last week, or shall we do a quick revision and see what you all remember?
I vote for a quick revision.
Yeah, all right, quick revision it is. Okay, now one of the things I will point out is that there are certain utilities that you can use, such as IP Subnet Calculator. Microsoft has one that might even work under Vista. There are also some Linux command line tools like IP Calc and IP6 Calc and IPv6 Calc and my favourite subnet calculator, which is just one I made up, but I'm sure there's plenty out there. We'd encourage you not to use those subnet calculators because you can if you're in a hurry, but you must know how to do it properly for the Cisco exam, otherwise you'll fail because there are questions in there where you've got to do it. And I'll get my... Oops, stupid thing. I'm just going to extend this on-off time on this silly AutoVox because it keeps cutting me off before I finish rambling. 1 second. Ah, okay, that's better. Now, there we go. And Gordon's having his 10 past 9 cough. And here we go. Yes, it's very important that you do know how to do these calculations yourself in your noggin because you keep having to do them in CCNA 2 and then CCNA 3 and CCNA 4 and they sort of expect you know how to do them once you finish CCNA 1. We don't really come back and revisit them once we've done them in CCNA 1. It is assumed knowledge. So if you're not really clear on it and you need to practice, make sure you practice it up because we're going to keep doing it. And although we will try and help you if you do forget how to do it, there will come a time where we will sort of go, if you're not calculating subnets, maybe internet working isn't the topic for you. Okay. I think that's probably my rant out of the way. The revision from last week. IP addresses are 32 bits long. They are usually written in a dotted decimal format. It's also called dotted quad, although Cisco never calls it dotted quad, but that's alright. Maybe it was seen to be politically incorrect or something. This means that there are four numbers between 0 and 255 separated by full stops. An example would be 192.168.0.1. The IP addresses are various classes. We have four or five classes worth of IP addresses, four classes with which we concern ourselves. Class A are IP addresses between 0 and 127 in the first octet. This means that the first octet has to start with 0, 1 in binary. Class B addresses are between 128 and 191. They have the first two bits of 1, 0, and they have a... the Class A addresses have 8 bits for the network portion and 24 bits for the host portion. Class B have 16 bits for the network portion and 16 bits for the host portion. Class C is an address range between 192 and 223. The 192 and 223. The range of those IP addresses, the first bits have to be 110. To get that range. And Class D is a multicast range between 224 and 239, and the first three bits need to be 111 for multicast IP addresses. Class C addresses have 3 bytes for the network portion of the address and 1 byte for the host portion of the address. Any questions so far? Okay, I'll assume your silence is a no, which is probably good because I'm now going to go and explain a couple of these things. The IP address is broken into two portions. One portion of the IP address is the I'm getting to the subnet mask, that's later. So no, yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. We'll certainly be doing subnet mask. In fact, we'll be doing more subnet masking than you'll comfortably come to terms with. There are lots of exercises, in fact, that you get to do, which is all quite unpleasant. Now, your IP address is split into two sections. I'll tell you what, it'll be damn nicer at the association. It'll be a lot quieter. Network portion and host portion. The network portion tells you which network your machine is on, and the host portion tells you which host on that network you have. Now, the reason we do this is because the internet is a connection of a lot of smaller networks, and we connect them all together in this sort of meshy, sort of connecty sort of way with multiple redundant routes and all sorts of things. And you can go to www.google.com. And the world will be a happy place. We will talk about exactly how you go to www.google.com in future lessons. The way you decide how many bits are part of the network portion and how many bits are part of the host portion is, in the old days, you used to use a thing called classes. Class A addresses had 8 bits for the network portion and 24 bits for the host portion, which means you had 128 networks of 16 million machines. Class B had 16 bits for the network portion and 16 bits for the host portion. This results in networks that contain up to 65,534 machines. Class C have 3 bytes for the network portion and 1 byte for the host portion, which results in networks with a maximum of 254 machines. Why am I subtracting 2 from the number of machines that can be on these networks? There are special reserved addresses in TCP/IP. The bottom address in a range is known as the network address. So, for example, if we have a Class C network, 192.168.1, 192.168.1.0 is the network address and refers to the entire network as far as routing tables are concerned, which we will discuss later. And 192.168.1.255 is the broadcast address for the 192.168.1 network, which means that you talk to every machine on the 192.168.1 network. With classes, you only have a certain way of breaking up the address space, so you can either have Class A, Class B, Class C, or Class D for multi-class and Class E for experimental. However, the problem with this setting is that you end up with a lot of IP address wastage. And in fact, one of the problems is because IP addresses are only 32 bits long, there are only 4 billion addresses or so that we can hand out, and the world is running out of IPv4 addresses. Hence the push towards IPv6, which we will discuss further on down. I'm not working from the amazing notes of Seek Tech this morning, so if I get a bit confusing, you guys let me know and I'll come back to something because this stuff's easier to do without the notes. Well, for me anyway. Now, because classes weren't very efficient and we wasted a lot of IP address space, if you get allocated a Class A, for example, if you get, 37 dot, you've got the ability to put 16,666,000 and something hosts on that network. If you don't use all of those IP addresses, you end up wasting a whole stack of IP addresses that nobody else can use. There are a number of networks that do have Class A. The total number of hosts per class is found by, if there are 8 bits in the network portion and 24 bits in the host portion, then 2 to the power of the number of bits in the host portion tell you how many possible addresses you can have on that subnet. If you subtract 2 from that number, then that tells you how many hosts. So the number of hosts on a TCP/IP network is 2 to the power of n minus 2, where n is the number of bits in the host portion of the network. I'll do a worked example for you. A Class C network has 8 bits in the host portion. 2 to the power of 8 is 256, last time I checked. 2 to the power of 8 minus 2 is 254, therefore there can be a maximum of 254 hosts on a Class C network. If you want to know how many Class A networks, how many Class B networks, how many Class C networks you can have, you can calculate that by looking at the ranges and seeing how many subnets and things you can create. So for example, Class A, we're 1 to 126. So there's 126 Class A networks, and then you can work out the other ones yourself, but I'd just Google it up, to be honest. It's probably easier. Okay, now what they found with class-based routing was that once you got allocated a Class A, B, or Class A or a Class B, you tended to waste a lot of addresses, especially if you got allocated, even if you got allocated a Class C. What they then decided to do, and the reason we use class-based addressing is because you're subnetting on a byte boundary. A Class A network has a subnet mask of 255.0.0.0. That is to say, the first 8 bits are 1, and the last 24 bits are 0, which means there are 8 bits in the network portion, 24 bits in the host portion. A Class B network has a subnet mask of 255.255.0.0. That means that you have 16 bits in the network portion. In other words, the first 16 bits of the subnet mask are set to ones, and you have 16 bits in the host portion. A Class C subnet has 255.255.255.0. That means that there are 24 bits in the network portion. There are 8 bits in the host portion. This is to say that the left-hand 24 bits of the subnet mask are 1, and the right-hand 8 bits are 0. If you AND the subnet mask with an IP address, you will end up with the network address of the network. Anyone want me to elaborate on that one? Okie-dokies. If you have an IP address of 192.168.1.1 and you have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0, you will remember from your Boolean algebra that 1 and 1 is 1. So if we AND the first lots of 255 on top of the 192.168.1, and you can do this with your binary pegboard later, you'll find that you'll be left with 192.168.1 once you do the AND. And then when you AND the 0 on top of the 1, because you had the 1 in the IP address up the top and the 0 down the bottom in the subnet mask, it will actually turn that 1 bit off, and the result of doing that entire AND, which I will work through slowly with some people if they need me to, will be the result of the IP address 192.168.1.1 ANDed with the subnet mask of 255.255.255.0 is 192.168.1.1.0. Which is the network address for the 192.168.1 Class C network. Do not panic, there are 9 labs on this that you will get to do. There is plenty of really tedious working out, and you get to practice this lots and lots and lots. Ian's still probably typing up those labs, or may have typed them up yesterday, I'm not sure. But you will certainly be doing a lot of that anding. So if you and the subnet mask with an IP address, you will be left with the network address of the subnet that that's on. Now, that is to say, this is how a router decides whether a host is on your network or not. If you have a Class C network at home and you have 192.168.1.1 with a subnet mask of 255.255.255.0, which I think we've all seen quite a lot if we've plugged in any router built in the last 6 years from Netgear or D-Link or Billion or Belkin or whatever, the router basically takes the subnet mask and ANDs it with the IP address and checks. And once it does that, it finds that the range of addresses that are on your local subnet of 192.168.1.0 to 192.168.1.255, and I do include the network and broadcast address in that range, are on your local subnet. Can anybody tell me what would happen on a simple home-based router if you were trying to send a packet to an address outside the range that I've just specified from 192.168.1.0 to 192.168.1.255? What do you think would happen to it if the router was configured correctly and working? Well, no, if the router was correctly configured, and you if it wasn't correctly configured, it wouldn't go anywhere. You wouldn't be able to get it out there. However, if you have correctly configured the router and it has a default gateway, then all of the packets will be sent to the default gateway. This is also often called either your default route or your default gateway. And it's a catch-all route that says, I have no idea what to do with this packet. Hand it to that bloke and he'll know what to do. Now, for machines inside the network, behind a router, what do you think they would generally have their default gateway set to?
The IP address of a router?
Sounds pretty good to me. Everyone agree with that? Yeah, okay, cool. I mean, basically what happens is it sort of works like the postal system. If you don't know, if you can't give it to the post office and they don't know where to send it, your letter's not gonna is not gonna get out and get sent to the destination. Okay, so we've talked about Class A, B, and C addresses, and I'm running through this pretty quickly because I will elaborate further later on down the lesson, but I want you guys all to practice with this a bit. Basically, what I'm trying to do is cover this, and so you guys can listen back to this when you're having trouble sleeping and maybe study up on it a bit. Now, we found that the class-based address scheme wasted a lot of IP addresses, and we have a critical shortage of IP addresses. If you try and get an IP address subnet, even a smallish one, it's very difficult to get your hands on them, and they're quite expensive. So you basically have to pay lots of money. It's the law of supply and demand. The demand has fallen, therefore the supply, sorry, the d demand has increased and the supply is low. So as Gordon would know, because I think Gordon did economics, that'll push the price up. Did you do economics or did you do history, Gordon?
I did politics.
You did politics. Okay, I'm just making it up today. Okay, so Gordon won't know about the supply and demand, but he will know how to get money out of other people's pockets because he did politics. You can tell it's a cold day because the politicians have got their hands in their own pockets. Now, moving on. Class-based addressing is an inefficient way of allocating IP addresses. What they ended up inventing and implementing, I think, in the early to mid-90s was what we call classless inter-domain routing, or CIDR. If you haven't written down classless inter-domain routing equals CIDR, I would strongly recommend that you write down classless, inter, domain, routing, CIDR. Basically what happens with CIDR, or if you're being lazy, you just call it CIDR notation, is that you actually have an IP address and a subnet mask. But the subnet mask does not have to end on a byte boundary. What happens is that if you have, say, for example, a subnet mask of 255.255.255.128, who can tell me how many bits are in the network portion and how many bits are in the host portion? That's 255.255.255.128.
Gary, you have 24 in the network portion?
No, there's actually 25 in the network portion. Because the subnet mask is 255.255.255.128, and take my word for this, I won't force you to actually convert it yourself right at this particular instant, but you will get to convert it later, that gives us a binary number of 11111111111111111111100000000. For those of you who didn't want to count the number of ones and zeros there, that's 25 ones and 7 zeros, giving us a total of 32. That's not a coincidence, by the way. Okay, so what we've done is, because the subnet mask doesn't end on a byte boundary, we have borrowed a bit from the host portion and given it to the... Sorry, we borrowed a bit from the network portion. No, we borrowed a bit from the host portion. Yeah, we have. We borrowed a bit from the host portion and given it to the network portion. So what we've managed to do is we have split the class C network in half. Because the subnet mask is 255.255.255.128, if we take our regular 192.168.1.0 network that we seem to be so fond of, we end up with two subnets. One that starts at 192.168.1.0 and runs to 192.168.1.127, and the second subnet goes from 192.168.1.128 and ends at 192.168.1.255. I'll just stop talking for a bit, and then if anybody's got any specific questions that they'd like me to work through or re-go through something, they can let me know, because that is a complex concept. Yes, the /25 format is how you write CIDR notation. You write the IP address, followed by a forward slash, and the number of bits in the in the network portion of the subnet mask. Some people would argue that if you were constantly writing 255.255.255.0 all the time, you'd break your 2 and your 5 and eventually your 0 keys. And it's also a pain to type in. So they came up with this notation so you could just put slash and the number of bits in the network portion of the subnet mask. Now let's work another example, and we'll see if this makes any more sense. If we borrow another bit from the host portion and put it in the network portion, pardon me, let's assume we have our 192.168.1.0 subnet. However, we have a subnet mask of 255.255, whoops, 255.255.255.192. So if we've got .192, that means we've got 8 lots of 1, 8 lots of 1, 8 lots of 1, 2 lots of 1, and 6 lots of 0. How many bits in the network portion? How many bits in the host portion?
Should be 26 and 6.
That is absolutely correct. Well done, Nancy and Gordon. If there are 6 bits in the host portion, how many hosts can we have on these subnets, given the fact that the formula of the number of hosts we can have per network is 2 to the power of n minus 2, where n is the number of bits in the host portion? Absolutely correct. 2 to the power of 6 is 64. Minus 2 is 62. Now, we don't have a problem with you using a calculator to do the bigger 2 to the power of calculations, although you're not allowed a calculator in the exam. But we do have a problem with you doing the subnet calculations on the calculator, obviously, as previously discussed. Okay, so if we've got a subnet mask of 255.255.255.192, how many subnets have we split the class C range into?
4.
That is correct. However, there is a caveat. Yes, all of the rules that you're just learning have to be broken. According to Cisco in CCNA 1, we can't use the zero-based subnet. However, as of iOS 11 point something, we can, but we don't... In CCNA 1, and I think this is still the case, the number of networks you can actually use is the number you calculate minus 1, because we can't use the zero-based subnet. There are technical reasons for this, which we don't actually go into a lot. But essentially, if you subnet a Class C network 192.168.1.0 and you break it into 255, 255, 255, 192, you essentially end up with 3 usable subnets. You end up with a subnet from 64 to 91, from 92 to 127, from 128 to 191, and 191 to 254, 255 even. So you actually end up with 3 out of the 4 subnets usable.
I thought it would be like 64 to 127 and... like that.
Ah, yes, you are correct, Graham. Sorry, my numbers are slightly wrong. 64 to 127, 128 to 191, I think. Yeah, that's right. 192 to 223, and 224 to 255.
How can you do the 192 to 223?
Hang on, just let me cheat here and crack a calculator. Here we go. 64 plus 64 plus 64, 192 plus 64. 192 plus 64 is 256. There we go. Shows I haven't had my can of Red Bull this morning. So, we end up with subnet ranges, corrected by Mr. Pierce here, from 64 to 127, 128 to 191. No, 128 to 128 plus 64. 128 to 192, and then 192 to 256. Right, I think I've all managed to confuse you all. Any questions?
Kerry, I have one.
Ah, yes. Okay, off you go.
All right. So what do we accomplish then if it's number of networks minus one if we do 255, 255, 255, 128?
We technically accomplish nothing, but I decided to work through the example anyway because when you actually do real Cisco stuff in CCNA2 and CCNA3, they do admit that you can actually use the zero-based subnet. In fact, I'd actually have to Google it up for you, but as of a certain iOS release, and maybe Alex or Ian could find it, you are allowed to use the zero subnet now. There's a new IP subnet zero command in the Cisco iOS that allows you to use that zero-based subnet, and I can't remember which iOS it was since, but there is one where they changed it to let you use it, so you could actually split the network in half now.
Okay, but on the test, it's going to be the number of networks minus one.
Oh, not only with Cisco, Rick. Microsoft does similar arbitrary things. I wouldn't just blame Cisco for that. You can use the zero-based subnet on most routing equipment that has been produced recently. There is always exceptions to this rule. There are always routers that will enforce class-based routing. However, most of those routers don't stay on the market very long because having a Class C subnet and not being able to subnet it is not very cool at all. Okay, so on your test, it's one less than the number of subnets you think you can use because you can't use the zero-based subnet. And as of a certain iOS, you actually can, but the test will give you numbers one less than what you expect. Now, if we split a Class C subnet, and we want the Cisco correct answer for this one, if we split a Class C subnet, 192.168.1.0, and we have a subnet mask of 255.255.255.224, which gives us 27 bits in the network portion and 5 bits in the host portion. How many subnets can we have?
Seven.
That is 100% correct. I'm just gonna triple check this because I'm pretty sure that's what we have to do. But I'm just gonna check because I'm always using the zero subnets. I'm naughty. Ah, lucky I checked. Apparently, you actually lose two of them. You actually lose, and I'm lucky I checked this because I always get this wrong when I go through this and I get the answers to the... Yeah, that's right. You can't use the zero subnet and you can't use the one that contains the broadcast address because there's no way of distinguishing between a packet sent to the whole subnet or because of the subnet that is based between the zero or the 255. So you actually lose two subnets rather than one. So in our example above, only six of the subnets are usable. However, in reality, seven are actually usable. You can reclaim the zero subnet, but you can't claim the 255 subnet. So, yeah, you actually lose two subnets as far as CCNA1 is concerned. If you want confirmation of this, if you do a Google search on IP-subnet-0, I think it's IP-subnet-0, spelt out, you'll actually find information that documents this. So we actually lose two networks. We lose the one at the bottom and the one at the top. And depending on the routing equipment you're using depends on whether that matters or not. Things have become a lot less strict. You can reclaim the zero subnet, and depending on how your network is architectured, there are certain rare circumstances where you can claim the other one, but you do run a risk of causing all sorts of strife. So we actually lose two subnets. So the answer to the question, technically speaking, is 7, but the answer that Cisco want is 6, and I'm glad I checked that up because I always get those ones wrong. Okay, now can anybody see that as we subnet networks on these boundaries, we can actually get more subnets with fewer hosts per subnet? The other way is also true. If we have a netmask of 255.255.252.0, or is it .254.0? It's .254.0, my mistake. You actually end up with a subnet that can have 512 addresses, with two of them being reserved, so you end up with 510 usable host addresses. Does anybody follow that logic?
Is that more expensive for you? Do you have to get two Class C addresses? Do you have to buy them?
Well, you'd have to do it with two contiguous Class Cs and it's you'd almost want it. That'd be sort of how you'd subnet parts of a Class B. For example, Nancy's netmask on her Comcast connection is actually 255.255.248.0. Okay, so I think a lot of it's going to be clarified when you guys actually work through some of the examples and read through the notes. But you do lose those two subnets, the top and the bottom subnet, as far as the Cisco tests are concerned. Although you can actually use the zero subnet in practice. And I'd encourage you all to look that up, because that's what I'm going to go and find a couple of good references on it later and refresh my memory, because I just use them anyway. But then again, I actually work in the industry rather than getting the examples right for the actual test, and they do actually correct that assumption later on in the course, because that assumption used to be 100% correct, but times have had to change. Now, I realise that's been slightly fragmented, and couple of mistakes I've had to correct as I go along. Has anybody got any questions on anything so far, or anything they want me to clarify? Which I would completely understand if you did. All right, I will take that silence as a we're all thinking a bit. Ah, you do. Okay, Rick, I would say. We'll let you key your question in there. Yeah, the /25 format, yep. Only two subnets, neither of which is usable as far as Cisco is concerned, so a waste of time. However, you can use one of the subnets, and certain networking operating systems will let you use both the subnets whether Cisco likes it or not. So you can actually split a network in half without subnetting, but it's not recommended for certain technical reasons, because Windows machines seem to require the ability to broadcast to be able to do name resolution, and various other protocols require the ability to broadcast, so you can break things if you're not careful. But you can actually split a network in half, and it will work if you're running sensible operating systems like Linux and stuff like that.
I'll take advantage of that silence. Alex just raised a good point. The reason you don't cover this using subnet zero and the broadcast subnets is this course deals only with classful routing.
Now, I'm sort of breaking the rules slightly here because I shouldn't have even covered classless routing in here, but I feel that if I give you all of the nasty stuff at once, you can digest it, and by the time you get to CCNA3, you should just be cruising on through. Because you'll have other things to worry about in CCNA3. Okay, now one of the other things I want to cover very briefly, and I'm not gonna dwell on this because it's not in the tests. IPv6 has addresses that are 128 bits long. Wow. That's a big address. Does anybody know how you write addresses in IPv6?
Very long.
Yes, you do write them very carefully. They are basically
in hexadecimal.
Yes, in hexadecimal. Yes, they are actually four digits of hexadecimal separated by colons times 16. As you can imagine, you don't sort of go around to people going, yeah, you want to set your IP address to 2E01:3B14:9144:8100:6161:3195:4191. Get that? You tend to hard code these addresses into you tend to hard code those into the DNS, and you use IP address IPv6 allocation methods to actually assign the addresses. Now, I'm not going to go too heavily into this, but essentially, what happens, and I'm doing this for Mr. McMillan's benefit, but we can probably have a fireside chat on it at some point, is that what actually happens is that. That's exactly why Vista is a it's a nightmare. Full stop. I think, but a networking nightmare specifically. What basically happens though is, generally speaking, the smallest prefixes that tend to be handed out, generally speaking, and all of this is general and experimental and subject to change with not very much notice, is that you hand out a /64 prefix. This means that there are 64 bits in the network portion and 64 bits in the host portion of the IPv6 address. This means that what happens is that you actually use the MAC address on your network card with a transformation algorithm that the really clever ones of you can Google up, and you actually convert the MAC address with a couple of bit twiddles into an IPv6 address, which goes in the bottom 64 bits of the big long 128 bit address. So there are sites such as www.freenet6.net, which will give you prefixes for nothing, and you can register on their service and get handed out a static IPv6 prefix. Now, basically, what will happen is, if anybody can imagine that there are 64 bits in the network portion and 64 bits in the host portion, how many addresses do you think you can have on your IPv6 subnet? If the answer you thought was 2 to the power of 64 minus 2, you'd be absolutely correct. And that's a big number. That means we can...
46 trillion addresses.
That's right. And in fact, what we can do is we can have an address, an IP address, or an IPv6 address, for just about every hair on your head, every object in your house. You've got quite a few of them.
I think it actually comes out to something in the hundreds of IP addresses per square meter of the Earth's land surface.
So there you go. Lots and lots and lots of addresses. And in fact, if you get handed out a /48 prefix, which is the size of the prefix that Freenet 6 will give you, you can actually create 65,536 subnets of 2 to the power of 64 addresses.
No one will ever need more than that, like 640k.
Well, there may come a time when we will need more than that, but put it this way, adding that extra machine to your network won't mean that you'll run out of IP addresses in the foreseeable future.
An IP address for each electron in your house or something, isn't it? Almost.
I'm sure there's something in the Wikipedia article on IPv6 that will tell you exactly how many IP addresses per watt. Okay, so now what happens with Windows XP, and in fact there is an IPv6 stack in Windows XP, if you go to the command prompt and type IPv6 space install, no, we don't spend a lot of time on IPv6 because it isn't as widely utilised as what a lot of people would like. It's getting there, but it's taking time. I believe Japan and Europe have already deployed IPv6. Curtain's using it? Which bits of Curtain are using it? Oh, okay. Is that actually externally routable IPv6? That's all right. It should be routable. Okay. I've just been informed by Alex, who used to work up in the dark side, sorry, at network operations, that they are actually using IPv6 on the Curtain backbone. And those addresses are routable and usable and like real and.
Okay, I've got some figures here that are rather interesting. IP version 6 supports approximately 5 by 10 to the 28 addresses. So that's 5 with 28 zeros on the end for each of the 6.5 billion people alive.
Okay, that's... You'll take 2? Okay, no problem. That will be 2 to the power of what? So essentially, now there are some significant architectural changes between IPv4 and IPv6, which I'm not even going to talk about. And if you want to know about it, you can ask me out of class, or you can go look it up yourself. Basically what happens with Windows, pardon me, is that it uses an El Torito tunnel. And it actually connects through to one of the tunnel servers, and it actually generates automatic IPv6 addresses. It's one of the ways of automatically assigning IPv6 addresses. So basically what happens, and providing that it works, is that you're tunneling IPv6 over IPv4, which means you're wrapping the IPv6 packets up in IPv4 packets, and all of your interfaces end up with magic IPv6 addresses. However, IPv6 has a different concept of how addresses are allocated, and in fact, you actually have what we call a link local address, which is one that's valid on your subnet, and you have a global address, which is valid on the internet at large. So you end up with at least two addresses per interface, and there's actually more. And Ian has strongly recommended that people go and have a look at the Wikipedia IPv6 article, because it is extremely good if you want to know how that stuff works. Now, the practical upshot of this is that as IPv6 is deployed, you need to get routing equipment that is IPv6 capable. Chris McMillan will know all about this. And if you get this routing equipment that is IPv6 capable, or that understands certain aspects of IPv6, you can then start to deploy that. And when you do that, you end up with, there are certain routers such as Earthlink has released firmware for the WRT54GS series of routers that supports IPv6. iOS since 12 point something generally has IPv6 support. Except if you're using crusty old routers like we are, and not all the 2500 series routers have IPv6 support. So you shouldn't be mucking with it anytime soon. Now, that's IPv6 in a nutshell, and I've omitted lots, and that's what Wikipedia is going to help you with. Has anybody got any questions about the whole module, not just IPv6? Okay, here's plan B. How about we let you guys go off and read some notes and find some labs and do some working out, and then if anybody's got any questions, we'll all be on Skype and you guys can call us back and ask us any of those questions you might have. How's that sound? Now, I'd just like to officially point out that at this particular point in time, absolutely, but I'd just like to point out that at this point of my explanation, I actually don't expect any of you to understand this yet. Ah, hello, Anthony. Nobody should necessarily get this straight away. What will happen is that over time, you will actually, this will all drop into place. You'll be washing the dishes, you'll be just, you know, swishing that water around in the sink, and you'll throw your favourite coffee cup down and go, damn it, I understand how that subnetting works now. And it really is like a bolt of lightning. There will come a point where it just all drops into place and you'll wonder what was so hard about it. Until that happens, you will absolutely sweat blood to do your first subnetting exercises. So let's let you all go and start doing a bit of reading and having a look at any exercises, if there are any up there. Are the exercises up there yet, Ian, or not? The subnet?
Yes, there's subnetting labs up on the website, so...
Okay, and we'll let you all guys go and look at that and start working through that. And the other thing we'd like to announce, and I'll post a message to the KV Announce mailing list as well, is that if you have any labs that need to be sent through, if you could send them to the KV-instructors@gots.net alias, we'll all get them, and then that way Geraldine will get the IT labs and I'll get the CCNA labs, and we'll all mark them. Sometimes I'll help Geraldine out and maybe sometimes she'll help me out, so yeah, that's probably the best place to send them to rather than the specific instructor, because I didn't get Rick's labs, for example. Alright, we'll have a quick chat to Anthony,
yes, I couldn't log in today because there was a heavy thunderstorm, and there's this short lull, I think. More thunderstorms are predicted, so I thought I'd say hello and apologise for not connecting.
No problems, Anthony, and the audio will be going up on the website later today, and over the weekend I will be writing you instructions on how to use wget to pull down the MP3s if your machine still refuses to download them.
Chris has left the server.
Yes, my machine still refuses.
Yeah, hit stop, actually.